My guest today is Sue Gray, Vice President of the Carbondale Historical Society. Welcome, Sue.
Thank you.
As Carbondale continues to reopen in a safe and socially distant way, Sue is here to help talk about the Carbondale is Open initiative as it relates to the Carbondale Historical Society. Sue, I'm excited to learn more from you. Hopefully some local listeners and tourists will also learn and relearn about Carbondale's history and venture outside to take in the wonderful history that we have here.
Yes, we actually have a wonderful preserved Western town here in Carbondale. So it's definitely of interest to anybody who's interested in the past, pioneer history, and the settlement of the West.
Yeah, as I was doing a little research before talking to you, I went down a rabbit hole and I realized just what you're saying. There's so much to learn and so many things to explore here right in our backyard.
Yeah, there really is. I've been involved with the Historical Society for about 6 years now, and I was amazed at how much rich history we really have in this area.
The Carbondale Historical Society's mission, as I understand it, is to connect today's community with the rich history of Carbondale. And like I said, the more research I do, I really do see certain similarities between the time when Carbondale was established and now, and it's pretty intriguing. I really wanted to know what makes Carbondale so unique to you.
Well, I think it's really the variety that we have here, and there's something for everyone. Like you said, there's ranching, there's horseback riding, there's hiking, there's so much outdoor activity here, and then we have the art. And really what drew people here in the beginning was this beautiful valley and its rich land and farming and ranching and mining. We have a saying at the Historical Society, history is rooted in the land, and it really is here. And we're still moving here and living here because of the land.
And Carbondale was founded in 1888, correct?
Yes. 1880 was when it was actually established as a town.
Okay. All right. And during this time of establishment in Carbondale, in the United States, it was also a time of really rapid expansion and industrialization. Carbondale seems no different. Like you said, there's something for everyone. And at the time, there was a lot of ranching, and what brought people here initially was a lot of ranching. Are you able to give listeners a quick history 101 on Carbondale?
Sure. So this area was frequented by the Ute Indians, or the Noosh people, as they called themselves, for hundreds of years before the white people came here. And they came here every summer to hunt and gather fruits and berries and plants for food. So they would spend summers here, but they would leave during the winters because it was really harsh here and there wasn't anything to eat. So there's trails throughout the area that were traveled by the Ute, which are still in existence now. A lot of the trails that we hike in the mountains around here were hiked by the Ute for hundreds of years. The first white people to the valley came here around the 1870s, and the Utes were still in the valley at that time. So they encountered the teepees and the Ute people here during the 1870s. And around 1879 or so, there started to be a lot of trouble between the settlers and the Native Americans in the area. There was a big event called the Meeker Massacre, where some whites were killed. And that pretty much led to the decision by the federal government to remove the Utes from the Colorado Territory. And in 1881, the last of the Ute Indians were removed from this area and moved on to southern Colorado and Utah reservations. And that pretty much opened up the land for people to come. And the first people that came here were in search of silver and gold. They were miners. There had been some surveys done in the area, and it looked like this would be a good place to find silver and gold, and indeed it was, especially silver. So that was the first boom that happened here. Aspen and Leadville had a silver boom, and the people who moved there eventually came down to Carbondale, and even though there wasn't a lot of silver here, there was land, and that's when people decided to settle and start ranching and farming in this area. So around 1880 or so is when the big kind of push for land came into this area. A lot of settlers moved here.
And Myron Thompson, he traveled here as well, and he came from Carbondale, Pennsylvania, correct?
Okay. He was born in Pennsylvania, but he came here from Dresden, Missouri, where his family he and his family, eight children and his wife, lived in Dresden, Missouri. He came out with his son Alex to find silver to, you know, make his fortune, basically. And they didn't do too well in silver mining, so they eventually came down from Leadville to Aspen and then on to Carbondale around the late 1870s, around 1880 or so, just about the time when Carbondale was starting to be established. They came down here and homesteaded some land and built their cabin, which is now the Historical Society cabin at the Jail and Cabin History Park. So that was originally built by Myron Thompson, along with Oscar Holland and Sam Bowles, his partners at the time. Oscar Holland ended up marrying Myron Thompson's daughter, Hattie, and they moved into the house that Myron Thompson built, which is now the Thompson House Museum. And Oscar Holland and Hattie Thompson Holland lived in that house until their death. Hattie died in the 1940s. And then the Thompson family, who was taking care of her at the time, her nephew moved into the house, and they lived there until the 1980s. And they kept the house, even though nobody was living there, the family kept the house for reunions and birthday parties and things on into the 2000s. And eventually the house was sold along with the land to a developer. And the developer saw the house and decided she didn't want to knock it down and build condos there. So she gave the house to the town of Carbondale as a museum. And the Thompson family, who is still alive, still living in the area, in fact, they all live right next door to the Thompson house right now, they gave all of the contents of the Thompson house to the Historical Society. So it's one of the few museums in the country that actually contains all of the artifacts and furniture and personal belongings of the original Pioneer family that moved into that house 100 or more years ago. So it's very unique museum as house museums go.
Right. That sounds amazing. And is the Thompson House something that is reopening now or not quite yet?
No, we've decided not to open for tours this summer. We're just going to wait it out and hopefully open again next summer for tours. However, the nice thing about the Thompson House is it can be viewed from the outside. It sits in the middle of a town park. You can walk around it, see the backyard area, which has a pond and some structures that were built. It's just a beautiful old Victorian home. You can kind of peek in the windows and see some of the stuff that's in there. And we also have Hattie's kitchen garden on the south side of the house, which I established about 5 years ago when the house was deeded to the town. There had always been a kitchen garden in that location. Hattie herself planted that garden, and then the Thompson family kept that garden going over 100 years, year after year. And I endeavored to do the same thing, planting it with original heritage vegetables and flowers that would have been popular during the time around 1900 or so. And that is open and viewable to the public anytime.
Okay. And I was going to ask, if the public wanted to walk over to the Thompson House and view Hattie's kitchen garden, what type of crops would they see? What are the Pioneer crops that they would see, and can they still see them today?
Yes, the garden is planted out fully right now with the 10 crops that fed the West, which is basically lettuce, carrot, beet, potato, corn, bean, squash, tomato, cabbage, and onion. So those would have been just the basic crops, which most people would have had in their kitchen gardens. And I found the old varieties, as old as I could find them, from the early 1900s, and still planting those same heirloom vegetables today. And we also offer the seeds of those vegetables. The garden is pretty much exclusively for demonstration, teaching, and for seed gathering. So we gather up the seeds every year, and we package them up, and we sell them at our events.
That's really nice. And so visitors could buy them right now if they wanted to, or would they wait for an event to happen?
When we have the tours going, we can sell them straight from the museums, both of our museums, the cabin and also the Thompson House. But right now, since we don't really have anything open, we're not able to sell our seeds. I'm hoping that at some point we can maybe put them online on our website. But at this point, we don't really have a large stock of supply that we could sell online like that. But the interesting thing about the Heritage Garden is there's a sign that tells you what all the crops are, how they were used, and why they were important, and why these particular crops were chosen. So you can take your own self-guided tour through the garden and just read the signs and look at the crops and understand this is the types of things that the pioneers would have been growing for their kitchen.
You do have a nice downloadable walking tour on your website that people can print off. And this seems like it could take an hour or even a few days for those who want to keep coming back to different spots on the map. We talked about Hattie's Kitchen Garden and the Thompson House. And the Heritage Garden is near the jailhouse and log cabin, correct?
Right. And that is just a smaller boxed raised garden with the 10 crops that Fed the West planted in them also. So there's two locations, and it's also got the same interpretive sign. So these two locations you can go to learn about these heirloom vegetables. And just take your own guided tour along with the walking tour of downtown. That's a downloadable map and guide that you can do yourself. It does take about an hour. We're also preparing a downtown historic homes tour, which we hope to have on our website in a couple of months that people can download and then take a tour of the residential area and see some of the old Victorian homes and original settlement homes in that area.
Yes, it'll be great to go on that tour. It just proves that there's more and more history here that people who are interested in pioneer history and other history would really enjoy. On your walking tour map, can you point out or talk about something, one spot that you love that people might overlook on the map?
Well, there's two, I think, major places on the map. One is the Dinkle Building, and most people know the Dinkle Building by the Steve's Guitars is in that building. The Bonfire Coffee, the Crystal Theater, the Black Nugget, those are all businesses that are in the Dinkle Building, which was built by William Dinkle in the early 1900s, and he was a prominent member of the town. So I think that is one of the most imposing buildings definitely in town, and definitely the most historic building we have regarding the building of Carbondale into a major town in the area. But the one I like the best is actually next door to the Dinkle Building on the north side, and that used to be the Sheridan Saloon downstairs, and upstairs was a brothel. And the boards on the floor upstairs still have the scrape marks from the movement of the beds in that brothel.
And
so to me, that's one of the funnest kind of stories, that we still have that building and we still have those floorboards with the scrapes on them.
Wow. And what is in that building now?
Right now, the building is occupied by Equus Private Wealth. So it's an equity company. And they did a big remodel on the building several years ago, but we're very careful to keep all of the historic aspects of the building preserved, including those floorboards. And even though it is a private business now and you can't really just go in and look at the floorboards, they were very careful to preserve that and not just pave over all of the history with new materials. So I'm really proud of the fact that Carbondale and Carbondalians preserve our history so well here so that we can continue to enjoy it.
And then, of course, the railway was really important to Carbondale for many reasons, and that's always open for the public to go and view because the Rio Grande Trail is on that now, correct?
That's right. Yeah, the Rio Grande Trail, what used to be the Rio Grande Railroad, and the railroads were extremely important to the towns in this area. Not only did they export coal, but they also exported potatoes from this area on the trains, and this was a huge potato processing or production area. In fact, it was one of the main potato-growing regions in the whole United States here in the valley, and they provided potatoes for the restaurants back east, and also during the two world wars, they shipped them overseas for the soldiers. So big, big potato production area here and pretty important part of our history. We still celebrate Potato Day to this day. It started in 1909. So that's a extremely important part of our history.
And then another thing that I wanted to go back to before we talk about the Marion Gulch Trail is at the time when Carbondale was established, obviously we talked about the expansion here and in the United States. And I was looking at a census record from 1910 in Carbondale, and it seems like there was a fairly large immigrant population, and I was so curious and happy to know that Carbondale's always been an immigrant community. So I'm assuming in regards to ranching and the potato farming, is that what drew immigrants to Carbondale?
Originally mining.
Mining.
Yes. Mining brought the immigrants to work in the mines, and we especially had a lot of Italian immigrants coming here. A lot of that was due to the similarities between this region and the Aosta region in Italy. A lot of immigrant families came from the Aosta Valley, which is very similar to here, so they were very comfortable with living here. Most of them did eventually move into ranching. We had a lot of Japanese laborers, and they would help load the potatoes. They did a lot of work in the fields. And some of the stonemasons that would work in the mines and buildings were also immigrants. So this town really was, you know, mainly built by immigrants, I would say, and populated by immigrants very early on.
Again, just more and more history and so much great facts to learn. Thank you. Lastly, you mentioned the Marion Gulch Trail, and I'm interested to know the history there. You mentioned there's a small cemetery there, and I wondered for those that want to get out and hike a little bit to go see their history, what that might have in store for people.
So the hike I did this morning, I went to the Spring Gulch Mine, which was in operation between 1893 and 1916. Originally, the town had 3,000 people, and it was a very big, bustling mining town. Coal is what they mined up there. And Marion was a little bit of a smaller settlement down the hill from Spring Gulch. And there's not much left in either area right now. There are a few buildings and stone foundations and, you know, just basically flattened log cabins that are just dilapidated. But that area is on private land, so you do need to get permission to cross the ranch land to get to the Spring Gulch mine area. But the Marion Cemetery is actually just to the right of the parking area for the Marion hiking trail there. So if you go up to the Marion hiking trail entrance and you look off to the right, there's a big iron fence that has a gate in it, and you push through that and you can go into this old overgrown area, just completely overgrown with oak and pinyon, and there are a few graves, very few, maybe five or six. Most of them are children's graves. They have marble headstones and iron fences around them, and they're from that same period of around the late 1800s or so. Just And, you know, because many of them are children and babies, you can see what a hard life people had and how hard it was to, you know, to take care of yourself up in this harsh environment without much medical care or nearby hospitals or anything at that time, you know. So they had a hard life, and they had a lot of kids, mm-hmm. and many of them died during those, you know, younger years. So it just tells the story of how determined people were to live in this wilderness area. They came out here from eastern cities, big cities, and, you know, modern areas to this basically wilderness, and built their homes here and lived here stubbornly, working the land for many years. And it's pretty interesting that the people from Marion and Spring Gulch, when the mine closed in 1916, they pretty much moved down to Carbondale and became Carbondalians at that point.
And just to finish things off, do you want to tell listeners, of course, your downloadable map is available to all. And
right.
What else can visitors go that will have things that we've mentioned in this interview for them to see, like the gardens?
Yeah, definitely. Even though the Thompson House isn't open for tours, it's a good place to just go and just take a look at the house itself and think about the period of time when that house was built. Originally, the Pleasant View Ranch, which was owned by the Hollins, was about 1,200 to 1,500 acres. So it went all the way down to, you know, like sustainable settings, like 5 miles towards Mount Sopris was their ranch. So just imagining that time period of having all that land and this beautiful Victorian house where they held many, many parties in that day. It was a very social time. And just kind of step back into the past, and then you can walk around to the south side, look at the garden there, and think about how they sustained themselves through, you know, those heavy winters, just on what they could grow in their gardens at that time. And if you peek into the backyard area, which is fenced off right now, you can see the beautiful little oasis that Hattie Holland created for herself and her friends to hang out in the shady backyard with a pond. It's just a beautiful place, too. And it's a public park, so, you know, feel free to wander around there. The other thing is the cabin and jail, which is just a fun place to go and check that out, even though neither of those are open right now also. We are renovating the cabin into a replica mercantile, and we're going to have a little crystal theater replica in the back so that we can show the movies of the story of Carbondale and its pioneers. So look for that coming next spring, next summer, hopefully, if everything goes back to normal at some point. But for now, I say just wander around these old buildings, take the downtown tour for sure. If you can, go up to Marion, check that out. There's lots of places outdoors that you can kind of just walk around and see the history. Another favorite place of mine is the White Hill Cemetery. It has a lot of pioneer graves up there and kind of just tells the story of the early pioneers of Carbondale. William Dinkle, who built the Dinkle Building, is buried up there. So that's another place to kind of see into the past a little bit.
Well, thank you so much, Sue, for this conversation, and I hope that all the Carbondale visitors and local residents get out there and have some fun with history.
Yeah, and definitely check out our website, carbondalehistory.org.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. You're welcome.
Bye.